This is Tradlore, a traditional archery podcast with me, Jimmy Halpenny.
Hello, this is Jimmy with the Tradlore podcast. It's been a while since I've recorded an episode. Actually, for me, it's been quite a while. Most of that has to do with the fact that I have been working quite a bit, and I had also developed a pretty severe case of target panic. Good news is that work is slowing down and the target panic is subsiding. So, good news for me. That being said, I didn't want to put out an episode that I felt was not up to the standard that I would personally want to listen to. So, I kind of took my time with that. On today's episode, I do have a guest. It is Ryan of Laurel Mountain Outfitters. And for those of you that do not know what Laurel Mountain Outfitters is, it is an online retailer of archery and outdoor products. And Ryan does a really good job of curating high quality, dependable products for his website. And he's also a maker of products on his website. So definitely recommend checking them out. I don't want to give any more details on it until you hear it come from his mouth on this episode. So we'll get right into it. I'd been talking to him for a while. My schedule was crazy, and he did a great job of working around that with me, so, you know, big shout out to him. But let's go ahead and get right into it. Here we go with the interview. Okay, so I have Ryan on the line with me from Laurel Mountain Outfitters. How are you doing today, Ryan?
I'm doing well, Jimmy. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. So the main reason I have you on here is because you are, in my opinion, a small business that's providing a lot of different products to the community, and you might not be as well known as some of the others at this time, but you have a pretty wide array of products on your website. Can you tell me a little bit about your company and how you got started?
Yeah, sure. So I started Laurel Mountain Outfitters because I was just I wanted to create something of my own. Honestly, I just wanted to have a business of my own, and I wanted to start something that was within my interest. So I just naturally went into the outdoors, and it's super heavy into the traditional archery right now. I just got tired of not finding the quality of products I wanted in you know, the typical brick and mortar stores around me, and I was trying to focus on building a business that would provide that and emphasize, you know, as much American-made product as possible. And that's kind of the heart and soul of it. And when I started Laurel Mountain, I really didn't have a well-defined like business plan or a goal in mind, I which is not the way to start a business. If anybody here is trying to take some business advice off of me, that is not how to do it. So fortunately for me, I work at a power plant full time, so I do have a full time job that's that takes care of me and my family pretty well. So I'm fortunate enough to make the mistakes and learn the hard way along the way with Laurel Mountain and get it to where I want it. Just kind of through brute force.
Gotcha.
Say. But when I did open it up, I had a pretty broad spectrum of things I wanted to hit, which was the hunting, the fishing, the camping, everything. And try to offer as much, you know, support as much other local business owners as possible as well. And, throughout the past year and a half or so, it's been quite evident that it's going to lead down the more of the hunting and the traditional archery line. Yep. It's just naturally going that way, and so I'm going to let Laurel Mountain take it to where it wants to go.
Right, I don't blame you. How long have you been in business?
On paper, a year and a half. Website launched February of 23, so just over a year the website was alive.
Congratulations. Made it through that first year.
Thank you.
I did see, and maybe this is something you want to mention on here, but you did have a lot of fly fishing stuff on there, and it looks like you're blowing a lot of that out. And I know
when I first opened up Laurel Mountain, like I said, it was fly fishing and like church and oratory and camping and stuff like that. And honestly, I'm a one man show here, and it was just too much to try to manage all of that realm, you know, all those avenues. And you know, I feel like I couldn't offer anything into those communities like a value added. Just, you know what I mean? I could just, you know, buy a fly rod and reel and toss my website and hope somebody buys it. And I couldn't add extra value to that service. So it made sense for that to go. And I mean, and naturally, my sales, I would say, you know, 80%, 85% of my sales are in the archery side of things anyways. So it was a pretty obvious decision to dump the fishing stuff.
And just for the listeners here, I do see, you know, you've got quite a bit of arrows on your website, including handcrafted. Now, are those painted, crested by you? Or?
Yeah, everything there you see is all touched by me.
So you've got that. You've got the shafts. You have wood arrows, shafts as well, which is something I'm going to probably be purchasing from you soon.
Yeah,
saw that today.
The wood, the carbon, and the aluminum.
And then a good selection of American-made broadheads as well, both screw-on and
glue-on. Yeah, I try to do as much as possible American-made, but, you know, in reality, that's just not feasible to do 100%. At a storefront, per se. But I think the last time I ran the numbers, I'm pretty close to 70% American-made products on my website.
That's huge.
Yeah, so I'm pretty proud of that. Awesome. I mean, that's pretty significant number in my mind.
I mean, you know, for what you have, you have a good selection. I mean, when I was looking, you know, there's some projects I'm going to be getting into soon, and you pretty well covered just about everything I need, which makes it easy because then you can one-stop shop. You don't have to pay for shipping from five different companies to get what you need, which is always appreciated. And then the other thing that really caught my attention on your website were your quivers. Looks like you have some handmade strap-on bow quivers, and they looked interesting. They looked different than what's out there right now. And I was, you know, kind of curious what sets them apart from everybody else's quiver.
Right. And actually what I have on the website right now, I need to pull off and update because I've made pretty significant changes to the quivers that are ones that are on there right now, actually. So I started playing around with making the quivers back, I'd say early summer last year. And it's just taken me till just now, just recently, you know, with the past 2 months that I'm comfortable with where they're at and really hit them in the market. But what sets them apart, I mean, if you want to, they can be completely customizable. The type of leather on the hood, the shaft, so the one piece quivers, the shaft from the lower section to the upper section, you can pick the wood you want, the stain you want. If you want a crested to match your arrows, you can do that. Everything is customizable between the colors of the leather, the shaft. The bottom portion is all one solid piece. I drew it up in CAD and I have it printed. Actually, the printer right there behind me.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I had to make it right here at my house. So I had to teach myself CAD again and teach myself all the programs how to get a printer running with some help. I had a fellow in nearby helping me out early on with the prototypes, kind of do the proof of concept work for me. So I would draw it up, send him the files, he'd print them out. I'd run with it for a little bit. Nah, we need to tweak this, tweak that. And I hunted all last season with one of my early prototypes, and I mean, I was in love with it. I mean, it was exactly the way I wanted to. I mean, it's dead quiet, solid on the bow, Old Zero was great. But the last changes I made, beginning of the year and into February are pretty much all been like cosmetic, and things to make the production side on my end quite a bit easier. It's a strap and post mount system. You measure where you want the post to hit on your fade outs, and I'll cut your shaft to length and stand it to match your bow, and you just, it's a rubber strap, and I'm working on printing custom made straps as well, but awesome. Those aren't ready to hit the market yet. But once it's on your bow, it is dead solid.
And then the one thing that I'd like, just to jump in here real quick, is it is connected from top to bottom, which
right, yeah,
so I would say minimizes movement quite a bit.
It's one piece, but does strap on your upper and lower part of your riser. And when it's on there, it dampens your bow. It doesn't move at all. I got some videos of it, me shooting in slow motion, and it just dampens everything. There's no vibration in it. It's pretty neat. Like I was the first time I put one on, and I kind of expected it to be horrible.
Right.
it's your first. I'm pulling something out of my mind, and it's now physically in my hands. Like, oh boy, I hope this thing works. And I strap it on, and I'm like, let's just hope it doesn't fall off. Basically. Right. Like, holy cow, this thing actually works. So going from there, it's been just the tweaks here, get the right measurements, get the cosmetics of it. So that is the primary one. And I'm just now putting out adjustable ones. So it's going to be a telescoping shaft. They're arrow shafts that slide into each other. So if you don't want a wood shaft in the middle or a carbon or aluminum shaft that's cut to one size, you can get a adjustable length one, and you can move it from bow to bow, and it's just as solid, just as quiet. There's no noise, there's no rattle between the shafts, the telescoping shafts. So that's something new. Like this week, I've sold three of them, and that's just the awesome word of mouth. I haven't even put on the website or nothing like that yet. So that's the heart and soul of it. I'm looking at one right now. So staring at my bow rack's right in front of me, and I'm staring at it. Like, what makes it different? All the hardware is completely enclosed. Mm-hmm. So there's no bolts or nuts that are going to get rusted and expose the elements. So all the hardware is completely encapsulated or covered up with either within the hood of the quiver or the base. That's one of the cosmetic changes I made within the past 2 weeks. There's like a decorative coin that goes over top of the bolt head that attaches to the post. So there's no rust to be seen anywhere. There's nothing that can rust. And then within the hood of the quiver, I do have a built-in like a judo point. There's another insert within the hood. So if you want to have a judo point, you can screw it in there. So
I like that.
Yeah.
Because I was just kind of half stick the judo point end of it.
Right, exactly. So, the hood, it's got like a backing plate within the inside of it. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be ambidextrous. Just that's one part I have to make instead of the left and right hand model. So right. I was left with a hole on the opposite side. I'll just stick an insert in there, and now it's a feature instead of.
Yeah, use what you have. Use what you have.
Right. It actually works out pretty damn nice.
Right. No, I saw it, and I was kind of excited about it because I'd been looking for a new quiver, and it seems like there's a lot of options out there. But when you look, you have a few basic designs, and I'm not bashing any company, but it's always good to have options because
we all like different things. One thing I've learned starting this business and especially getting the traditional archery side, it's not so much a competition.
Right.
Like I've had what you would think competitors help me get established. right? And like, that's what I love about this community. It's not cutthroat. It's not, you're worried about someone stealing your design or stealing your market share. It's, you know, the more people we can get interested into this, the better we all are. And like you said, there's so many other quiver manufacturers. Like, right, I mean, here is a Selway,
right?
It's, I mean, I have them, I own them, I'm still going to use them even if I make my own quivers, like, because they're perfect for the bear takedowns and my bear son's bear grizzly. Like, I cannot have the Selway's Grayling quiver on that.
Absolutely,
it's perfect for it. So, like, yeah, I'm going to support other businesses that, you know, are in the same industry as me, because they all make great products.
Yeah. And that's one thing, too, with this, you know, the entire sport of traditional archery, is when it, especially when it comes to the USA-made products, there's very little as far as trash products out there.
Right.
Everybody puts their heart and soul into it, and it shows. I mean, we have, out of all of the other hobbies I have, you don't have as many quality products to choose from as you do in the traditional community.
Yeah, there's a lot of pride in the people that make their stuff here, and especially in this community. And, like, honestly, I sold a quiver, one of the early ones, and I made a lot of cosmetic changes I was telling you about earlier. And, like, mm-hmm. and so I just mailed that guy just a couple of days ago another free quiver. I was like, hey, Matt, like, you know, like, you got one of the very first ones that are in the market, and there's some things I didn't like about it. Even though you say you like it, you know, I'm not satisfied with what you have. So here's another one. So like, yeah, you got to take care of your customers, and they're not just customers after a while. You know, that's another cool thing. It's, you know, I met a lot of people that eventually become friends or get a shoot with, or, you know, stuff like that. It's
right.
It's taken me down a lot more avenues than I ever thought Laurel Mountain would when I first opened it.
And then just some other products, you know, the hunting scene that I saw that I wasn't aware of. You know, when I've gone onto your website before, I've looked at arrows and broadheads because that's mm-hmm. what I was looking for. But I did notice you've got a pretty big selection of game calls on there, and it's not just your run-of-the-mill run out to Walmart and buy a turkey call.
Right.
And that's, like, these are good products.
Right, they're all you know, small business made in the United States calls, and like, it's all our back when they're a clock, Mill Creek Valley, just name a few. You know, and they're all small businesses trying to make their way just like I am, and well, they make a damn good product, and, you know, I want to support them just as much as they give me the opportunity to sell them. The problem is I'm finding, you know, I meet so many people I want to have in the store, and then and it's just, I don't have enough money to buy enough product
right.
to showcase it all. I mean, it's just, they're all great people. They're all passionate about what they do, and they put their heart and soul in the stuff they make. And, like, how could you not enjoy that and want to support it?
Absolutely. And then another thing I saw, and I think this might kind of transition into the next segment of this podcast a little bit. But you do, I see, sell saddles as well.
Right.
And that's, you know, something that keeps growing. And I even see it growing more in the traditional archery community.
Mm-hmm.
And just wondering if you personally, you know, if you're a saddle hunter, or right. what is your method of hunting?
Well, I do everything. So I do have, you know, I hunt out of blinds, I hunt out of ladder stands and climbers and hang-ons in the saddles. So this year, my oldest son is 12, and, you know, he shoots bear grizzly 40 pounds, and he was his first year actually bow hunting in, out of a tree stand. And yeah, I was looking to either buy a saddle or you know, a lightweight hang along with some sticks. And I was going back and forth about which one to get. And I was kind of leaning towards a saddle because I had a handful of years ago, I almost fell out of a tree stand. I slipped and I caught myself where I was strapped in. And I've been really gun shy about tree stands ever since. And yep. you know, one of the big takeaways are that people like about saddles is it's a way safer way to hunt, at least you feel like you are, you're always attached to the tree. And so that was a big selling point for me. But as I was in the search between a hang on and a saddle, Ape Canyon actually reached out to me, said, "Hey, we see your website. You see that you specialize in American made products and we think we're a good fit." And I was like, "Yeah, I totally agree." And I took that as a sign and like, "Yep. Okay. I'm going to be a saddle hunter now." So see, I bought one of their saddles for myself and then I bought a couple to sell. So like they didn't give me a saddle for free to sell, or to promote them or nothing. I actually bought it for myself. And, yeah, it's been great. I hunted the tail end of this past archer season out of the saddle. When I was up, I got from my cabin. My cabin's where I do a lot of the climbing tree stand or now the saddle hunting. The spot I hunt around my house, it's like a ladder stands in, so it's hard to beat those. You're in and out real quick after work.
Right.
But,
I'm not a tree stand person at all. That's why I'm interested in the saddle, because I feel like it would kind of give me a little more confidence because of that attachment point that you always have. So anytime I can ask somebody about them, I always do.
Yeah, so I really like that Ape Canyon. I said, let me think about it. You know, they gave me their name and stuff, and I was like, let me do a little research. And they're made in Butler, Pennsylvania, so they're made probably 45 minutes away from where I am. And they really got their start in the industry as arbor, making harnesses for arborists and for rock climbing gear. So they've been making these kind of harnesses for pushing 50 years now, I think. And they're just getting into the hunting side of the industry. I mean, but they got decades of knowledge and experience, with this type of equipment. So like I was, you know, my mind was put at ease just going with theirs at first, like with no other comparison, honestly.
That goes a long way, because especially arborist.
Yeah, that experience is worth its weight in gold. So,
now,
they know what they're doing and they know what they're making. And, right. yeah,
and not I'm afraid that
it'd be uncomfortable. I mean, because it, you know, it kind of looks uncomfortable and, you know, it's a new system you got to learn. And I picked it up like right in the middle of the archery season. It's like, oh, this is, we're going to trial by fire. We're going to learn as we go, because my son is hunting and he has my climbing tree stand. So I'm without a tree stand now. So I have to learn right now. I mean, but that was great. I get him set up, and get him, he'd climb up and get set and ready to go. Then I'd make sure he's, you know, had his bow and stuff and he's good. And I'd scoot over 50, 70 yards and I'd climb in my tree. And, but like once you get in that thing, it's just, once you get it set the way you like it, and it is just, you're up there just swinging around. It's comfortable. It's way more comfortable than I thought.
Is it easy to get a shot off and draw in one, or?
I mean, it's a learning curve. It's not going to be the same as if you were standing out of a tree stand. That's for sure. Cause you have to plan, where you think the deer is going to be, obviously, and have it on like your strong side, they call.
Yeah.
But like while I was in there, I did a lot of playing around, like trying to get spun around for my weak side shots. And like, it's completely doable. I mean, there's, it just takes practice, just like anything else. You know, like I was, I was hunting in that for a while, and then the following weekend I was hunting back at home in my ladder stand, and I was trying to like see the range of motion where I can and can't shoot at my ladder stand, just because you're trying to reach around the tree. And I would say like the range of shot opportunities is about the same.
Sure.
It's just a matter of how you get there.
Right.
That makes sense. Like you have to either, you know, like stand up and turn around in your ladder stand or your tree stand, or in the saddle, you have to spin up, you know, stand up and, you know, get the tether over your bridge and like stand and like up against a tree and spin that way. Or you, you know, I'm new to this. I'm not going to be exactly an expert by any means, but,
no.
Yeah, but it was, I had my opportunity. I mean, I missed a deer out of it this year, so there's that.
It's an experience. I mean, that's what matters. Yeah. Now, you said this was your kid's first year. Did he have any success or at least get to see
anything? Oh, yeah. So this first year bow hunting with his recurve. I mean, he's been hunting in Pennsylvania. We have our junior mentor season, so yeah. He's been hunting for a handful of years now. And he's pretty lethal. But, yeah, we had a handful of opportunities. We went up for a long weekend in my cabin, and he did up missing one. So the deer I just told you I missed out of my saddle, there was a group of 10 does, and they came filtering through this bottom up towards me. They recently logged the area we hunt, so there's all these treetops and stuff down. And I wasn't expecting them to take the route they did because they had like come through a top that was down, and they made all kinds of noise breaking through and stuff. And they came right to me, and they were about 10 yards. The one I missed, like the lead doe, and like she saw me, but she settled down and she eventually gave me like a quartering way shot, and I just rushed it. I didn't pick a spot. I just shot at the deer instead of picking a spot. But when I shot, all the other deer ran right towards my son. And, like, he was surrounded. There was 10. There was 10 deer, like 10 does. No boxes. Yep. No rut. No boxes. There's 10 does. And he's got deer in front of him. He's got deer behind him. And, you know, I could see him kind of, like, spinning around. Like, he was trying to pick one to shoot. And, and I hear, bang, and, like, I just hear like, he's shooting aluminum arrows. And I just hear that distinct sound of aluminum banging off of limbs going through. And, like, I think I had a GoPro on. I'm like, well, that's a miss. And then a couple deer take off. But then like, more deer are filtering behind. It was just total chaos. And, you know, I see deer standing all around. And I'm trying to, like, I'm talking to myself, like, shoot, you have it. And you have the opportunity. They're right there. They got to be within range. But he would get set on one, draw back, and by the time he got like, ready to go, it would spook. And then he'd turn around and see another deer, get the same thing, and before you know, they're all gone. But it was a very exciting 45 seconds.
Those are some of the best hunts.
Between the two of us.
And some of my favorite hunts are misses I've made, so it's all good. I mean, I like the ones more where I'm successful, but...
Okay, so at this point in the episode, we actually got disconnected from each other. We had to reopen another session to finish the interview. But before we do get to the next part of the interview, I want to take a moment just to let everybody know it is important to get the youth involved in the outdoors. They might not be interested in hunting. They might not be interested in fishing, archery. It doesn't matter. But no matter what their interests are, just letting them know how important the outdoors and wildlife is to everyone is a huge step. And obviously Ryan is doing a really good job of being a representative to youth in the outdoors. I just thought it was important to get this little public service announcement out there. So let's go ahead and get back into it.
Yes, this is starting. Okay. So we had some issues there, but getting back into it, you'd mentioned where your son had a pretty good experience, and I was just wondering if you all are a bow-only family or if you're a two-season gun and bow family.
No, we're definitely two-season. We I have three boys. In,
wow.
Yeah, so Jack will be 13 here pretty soon, and Wyatt's 10 and Midland's 8. So it's hard to get all those tags filled in one season, that's for sure.
Yeah.
We enjoy all the seasons. So typically rifle season for me now is, I take one of the boys and they sit next to me. Well, now that, Jack was 12, he's able to sit by himself, a certain distance away. So this season I had my middle son with me and Jack was, you know, 70 yards up the hill from here. So just in sight. And, my middle son was able to kill a doe first day of rifle, which was fantastic.
Awesome.
Yeah, because he's the type that he's very hesitant to want to do something. And then once he starts it, he's all excited about what he's doing.
So I've got one of those.
You know what I'm talking about. Like, it's like, as we're walking in the sand in the morning, it's like, oh, my stomach hurts. You know, he's playing the game. Like, I said, buddy, you're just nervous. It's early in the morning. Like, just let's get to, we're almost there. We're 40 yards from the stand. Let's just sit down and just take a break and you'll be fine. And we saw a couple deer. And once we saw those first couple deer, like, he turned on and he was fine. He was ready to go. And, then another couple deer came off the hill in front of us and he took a good shot. It was great. It was fun. It wasn't maybe 30 minutes later. So he shot it, and then my other son came down, and my dad, he was in a tree stand about 150 yards away, his wife's first deer, so he wanted to be there while we, take pictures and do that kind of thing with him. So we all came down and took care of the deer, took the pictures and stuff, and then everybody went back up to up to their stands, and it probably wasn't a half hour after we got settled in, my dad shot a nice little, a little 7-point that same morning. And it's nice, it's fun having a couple of deer down in the same day.
Absolutely.
And having a good, successful day.
And so do all of your kids shoot archery or?
Yep, they do. They do. So we had, just this past Sunday, we were at a 3D shoot. My middle son, Wyatt, he came. They got, so Jack is now shooting a bear grizzly, 40 pounds. Wyatt is still shooting his, I had a guy, Dan DeKempel, he was making dark timber bows. He doesn't make bows anymore, but I had him make, Jack and Wyatt one, from Etar a couple of years ago, but before they moved to, they are now. So we're at Denhill. That's where I put the order. And so Wise was shooting his custom bow from Dan. And my son Waylon, I got him a St. Joe River.
Which, how do you like that one?
The St. Joe?
Yeah.
Oh, it's fantastic. For a youth bow, it is it's beautiful. It's fantastic. I actually just mailed out a set of arrows for a fellow. He bought a St. Joe for his son. He was messaging me about a month ago. Hey, like, you have a youth bow you recommend? And, St. Joe, I think it's called the Little Rapids. They have a Little Rapids and a Big Rapids, I think.
Yeah.
Just different size youth bows. And they have like a trade up program. So if your little one grows out of it, you can mail that one back and get credit and get a bigger bow for them. And that's awesome. And like, they're affordable custom youth bow. And they do a lot of great work for Compton Traditional. So like, it's hard. How could you not recommend that?
Right. So see, I've been looking at him. I have an 8-year-old and he has, it's like the youth Sam Sage.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, the performance on that is pretty terrible. So I've been looking for something different that, I can't even shoot it well at 5 yards. So. Just floppy limbs and it's bad.
No, this thing is nice. It's a nice bow. And it looks nice. It shoots nice. And, there's a handful of other youth bows out there. I think Stalker makes one. I think the Weasel, what is what it's called. There's another big bow name. They have a youth setup out there too. I'm forgetting now. I'll draw a blank.
One, I think it was like Prairie or Predator or something like that, but I think that they went out of business because I was originally looking at that one.
Mm-hmm.
But looking for something new for him. So really liking, I like the way the St. Joe River bows look in general.
Yeah, and it's, they'll get you set up. They usually have a couple in stock and you can make one custom if you want. Hey, you can't beat it.
Now, for you yourself, what bows are you shooting? Is it, multiple, one?
Yeah, multiple. So right now, my go-to is a Tolkien Chinook. I bought that, actually during rifle season. fellow Chris Weiss, he messaged me on Instagram. Hey, do you, do you have any, anybody having interest in this? Or like, yeah, maybe I can put it on the website. And then, you know, a couple of weeks went by, I'm thinking about, I was like, you know, I kind of myself. So I messed in the back, hey, that's not for sale. And I said, I'm going to take it. And then he happened to live fairly close to my cabin. And so during rifle season, while we were at my cabin, I met him and picked it up. And I'll tell you what, that thing is just, it's a shooter. It's nice. It fits me perfectly. I love the grip in it. And it's, yeah, it's just perfect. I love it.
And you got to skip the weight too.
That is
on the list.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you got to get to skip the weight on that and, the weight list. But it, yeah, it's, 50 pounds at 30 inches. Some probably 28 inch draw. So I'm probably pulling like 47 pounds on that. But it's a great bow. And then, my Striker, that thing's got a lot of blood on it. That, I have a Striker Takedown Deluxe. I bought that, when Striker used to set up the booth at, the Harrisburg show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've killed the last four deer in archer, I've killed an archer season with that Striker. And it's a 50 pound.
Though.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I shoot my Tolkien now better than it. And, you know, but it's just got a, it's got the blood on it. You know, how do you give that one up?
Right.
And, I got a Bear Takedown, short riser with long limbs. I forget the combo. I think it's an A riser, C limbs or something, right? That's a 55 pound. That's the bow I took out west to, Montana this year for elk. And I have some other ones here and there. I picked up the yard sales, some
right.
Blackhawks, some old Blackhawks, and have another Bear K-Mag. Just old ones I like to have on the shelf. I fling arrows at them every once in a while. But my actual hunting bows and my go-to shooting bows are the Tolkien and the Striker and the Bear Takedown. I kind of cycle through. Yeah, I cycle through, and, you know, I'm not married to one. You know, I don't mind changing and trying new ones out too.
And are you like a heavy arrow weight guy, light arrow weight, middle of the road?
Heavier side. Yeah, heavier side. So like this past season, for with the Striker for deer season around here, I was shooting cedars, with, well, I think I was shooting 145s up front. So like, I was over a 600 grain, it's like 670, maybe 650-ish grain in that arrow. And then I just made up a set of Autumn Orange 2020s for my Tolkien, and they came in at 580. So they're, you know, on the heavier side. They're not obscenely heavy.
Not crazy, but.
Yeah. They're not obscenely heavy like some guys like, but they're, you know, they're heavier than the mid-range, I guess.
I always like to stay between the 500 to 650 range.
Yeah, right there. That's a sweet spot for me.
Safe place.
Yeah.
And then what kind of broadheads have you had success with?
Let's see here. Success with? Like shot stuff with?
Yeah. That you like the performance of, I should say.
All of them. I mean, like, I've killed a couple with Wikis. And I've killed a couple with Magna Stingers. I killed a couple with Meatheads. And this past year I used Ace Standards. And all of them have been just fine. You know, it's, I don't get too wound up in that whole, it didn't get a good blood trail or this or that, or, you know, it was a broadhead. There's so much stuff happening when you send an arrow through a deer. It could be the angle you go in at. It could be you missed an artery by an eighth of an inch, or it is what it is. Like, so, I mean, I had the first buck I killed with a trad bow. He was at 6 yards, and I shot, like, you know, there's a steep angle down in, high into the back, and it didn't poke out the bottom, you know, but it was, the broadhead was into the rib cage, but didn't pierce the skin. And so I had a shit blood trail. Yeah. And it is what it is. I mean, the deer was dead within 100, and I think he made it 100 yards. Like, that wasn't the broadhead's fault. The broadhead did exactly what it was supposed to do.
A lot of people don't think about that either.
Right, yeah. I mean,
so many high shots, and it'll put a deer down, double lunging high shot, but you're not going to get any blood.
Right. And, you know, I hit, probably about 4 years ago, I shot a doe. I hit her high. It was not a steep angle shot, but I hit her high, and I hit like the arteries underneath the spine, and it was a massacre. You know, I didn't hit lungs. I hit her a little back, but high, and I hit all those arteries underneath the spine, and she made it 50, 40 yards. There's blood everywhere. I mean, and the deer I shot this year, I shot her right through both shoulder blades, into the meat in the shoulders, passed through. So I hit, you know, I got both lungs and the top of the heart, and, you know, the blood trail was it was an easy trail to follow, but it wasn't like you were just taking a stroll through the woods. You had to like look, and she only made it 65 yards. So like, I mean, I don't get too spun up on that side of things. So if I can get them sharp, that's
the main thing.
Yeah.
And, one thing I'd like to ask as well, because there's a lot of interest in this, from me as well. But are you, like, what's your aiming method? Are you instinctive, gap, shooting?
I'm instinctive, I guess you can say.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't, right now I'm just all over the place. I'm horrible.
I that's where I've been. I get you.
It's funny. I realize what I'm doing. So when I'm shooting in the backyard, you know, I shoot like instinctive, and I'm really playing around with, switching from a glove to a tab, and I'm really enjoying the tab now, and I'm getting a good anchor off my cheekbone. Cause before I was trying to, use tabs, and I was trying to anchor in the same spot I was with a glove, and it just felt foreign. I didn't like it. I didn't like my hand position, and it was just a mess. But now I changed my anchor just a little bit, and it made a world of difference. And in the backyard, I'm confident, and it feels good. And then I go to a 3D shoot a couple of days ago. First couple of shots, I am just lethal. And then I get the bullshitting with my buddy as we're walking through, and I don't take the 3D shoots, like those shoots, seriously enough. Like, I'm not scoring, obviously. Like,
right.
You know, I'm with my boys, and I'm bullshitting my buddy, and I'm more worried about how they're shooting and the conversation we're having than my form.
Yeah.
And then I just lose all, you know, I'm a mess. So I know what the problem is. Now I know what to fix. So that's half the battle, is knowing what the problem is, right?
That's a hard one. Back in November, I bought a longbow. And at the end, when I bought the longbow, I mean, up until that point, I was shooting really, really good. And so I bought it, and I immediately fell apart. I mean, just completely. And this has been going on since November. Well, finally, because I always video whenever I'm practicing, just so if something happens, I can see it. And I realized that I had my shoulder or my elbow way up in the air from the day that I bought the longbow up until that day. And sure enough, I sold the longbow because I thought it was trash. You know, it wasn't me. I'm going to blame the bow. And that one little fix changed everything. So like a half a year almost of frustration, and just a tiny adjustment.
It's amazing how one little, a small adjustment like that can throw your entire shot off.
Yep.
And, you know, like the video in yourself that you said, like that is crucial. Like that reveals so much. You know, you take a couple shots and you look at it, like it's so easy to dissect what you're doing wrong. And I noticed, when I'm not focused, like when I'm caring more about the conversation around me or whatever, I'm more worried about where my boys are when I'm shooting and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. When I anchor, I can't get a nice anchor, and I'll move my head around. Like I'll kind of like move my head into its anchor position instead of having my hand come to its anchor. And like when I do that, I'm done. I've lost it. I need to just hang it up for a day and regroup.
That's the best thing to do. Walk away.
I know what I'm doing. I don't know how to stop it. You know, this is a bad habit. I want that comfort of how it feels in my cheek, you know, and if I don't get it right away because I'm not paying attention with, you know, my alignment and everything, I start moving my head into that to get the alignment that I want. When I'm doing that, I'm not facing the right way. I'm not looking down the shaft the right way. I'm not, you know, nothing ever aligns. I'm trying to force it into a feel than I am letting it naturally happen.
Yeah, I think, you know, to be a traditional archer, you almost have to be competitive against yourself because there's, you know, we are so hard on ourselves and it is such a frustrating sport, but it always seems it's like that whole, you know, I'm going to overcome this. Like I have to overcome it. I'm going to beat this. And then I see that so much now, you know, there are some people that they hit that wall and they just quit, of course. Yeah. But I think most of us, we've got that self-competitive edge to us.
Yeah, and there's the joy and the fun of finding how to make things work better for you. Yep. Like when I put down the compound and picked up the recurve, it was because I wasn't having fun shooting my compound anymore. It just wasn't fun anymore. Archery was no longer fun. And you know, after, you know, shooting bow for 20, 25 years, like it was a big part of my life and it was no longer fun anymore. And then I found shooting recurve, it brought all that back.
Yeah.
And you know, there is something different about it. And I can't quite put my finger on why it's so much more fun to shoot at a tennis ball in your backyard than it is compound at 60. Like, you know, I did enjoy shooting like long range. You get that satisfaction of getting those tight groups at 60, 70 yards. And like, that was awesome. And it's a lot of skill. And like, the shoot we were at last weekend, you see guys shooting, they have, you know, the pins at the trad pins, the hunter pins and the tack pins.
Right.
Attack pins are, you know, 70 to 100 yards. You see guys out there lobbing arrows, and you're counting the seconds off before the arrow hits the target, you know? And it's like, yeah, that was awesome. That was an awesome shot. But like, was no longer fun for me anymore. And finding the joy, like, you know, just flinging arrows in the backyard again.
Yeah. That's how it was for me, because I actually switched over actually 2 years ago on this day. I got a trad bow and I immediately sold off my compound. But for me, like I remember shooting a deer at 60 yards and I knew it should have been automatic and it was automatic and just something didn't seem right about that to me. And
yeah,
you know, that's kind of why I had made the switch. But when did you switch over to trad?
Probably bought my first recurve about 10 years ago. And like, it's been a transition. It wasn't a cold turkey deal. I mean, you look at my shoulder. There's my elite still sitting right there. I haven't shot this thing in 2 years. But I don't want to go through the process of selling it. It's just paying the ass on Craigslist or Facebook or whatever. But I picked up, I bought a Bear Grizzly 45 pound off of eBay, you know, just not knowing anything about traditional archery. I'm going to figure this out. And it was winter time and I was just shooting in my basement a lot. And it was fun. And then like I got to a point where like I was good at 10 yards, but I wasn't good at 15. And I was getting frustrated with that. And then get a little bit more distance, I'd be okay. But I'm not quite confident to go hunting with it this year. You know, I'm comfortable shooting at 15 yards in the backyard, but I don't think I can handle hunting with it. So it went on the shelf. Then I used the compound. And I did that for a couple of years. And then I think I've strictly hunted with my recurve for deer 6 years. I think this might be my sixth or seventh season. I'm trying to think of, because I killed a deer every year with it since I committed to shooting, been committed to deer hunting with it. Six. So I got 3 does and 3 bucks with it so far.
Awesome.
And then, so like it's the transition. I keep saying like it, I was comfortable like letting a deer walk, around here because, you know, I have all the time in the world to hunt.
Yeah.
You know, because if it wasn't the right angle, like right feel to it, like the right layout in a situation, or if it was too far or whatever, I was okay with letting it happen because I have more opportunities. But I go west elk hunting every year, and you know, I took my compound for a handful of years after making that switch to traditional for here for a deer back home. So in a couple of years there, I was taking both those. I was taking my compound and my recurve. So like the day, like we hunt as a pair. So the days I was the caller, I would take my recurve, and just cause it's, you know, I'm not expecting to get a shot. If I do, and it's going to come right to me, and I don't feel like carrying a heavy bow. So I was taking both those. Last year, I took just my recurve. I'm done. That's what I want in my hunt now out west. Like I've hunted enough years out west. I've killed a couple elk. Like that is now what I want in my elk hunt, is to kill one with a recurve. It's just, that would be the more satisfying part to me than not getting a shot. Like, I wouldn't be upset by not getting a shot at one because there's one hung up at 60 yards. We couldn't quite get it in all the way. You know, that's, I'm okay with that now. And like, that is a process. And it is, I hate to say it's like a level of maturity because I'm pretty mature myself, but it, I mean, it is like, it's what you want in your hunt. And if you're okay with letting things happen the way that they're going to without getting upset because, I spent $1,200 on an elk tag, you know, a week's vacation and, you know, a couple thousand miles in a truck.
Right.
Just let one walk.
And that's one thing. And I actually did not have an opportunity out further than my comfort zone last year, but this year, or 2 years ago, but last year I did. And it was weird because I thought that having that opportunity would suck, and it really didn't whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's a completely different mentality, but I didn't give myself that chance to shoot a compound because I knew that if I did, I would have gone back to it. So that's why I sold it. Like I told myself, if I want to hunt, I've got to figure this thing out now.
I mean, a lot of guys do it, and I applaud their commitment, we're going all in commitment to it.
I cut it close, to be honest. I cut it really close. But I've been successful both years. So, I mean, I'm thankful for that. But I almost, you know, did not get to hunt that year.
Yeah. Well, you know, once you feel lethal with it, and like that's a feeling that like it comes, not even just with killing something with it. It just, you get a level of comfort.
Yeah.
With the bow and how you shoot it and everything. And like, I don't know, you just walk in the woods with a stick and arrow and you feel lethal. Like, I don't know guys that have shot traditional archery all their lives or a long time can probably recognize or understand what I'm trying to say. But there's a point in time where you're like, okay, like, I'm okay. This is all I need.
It's a certain level of confidence.
Yeah, it's no longer the weapon or the method of kill. It's me that makes it happen. You know, it's my knowledge or my woodsmanship or whatever, like that makes the hunt successful or not. And whether it's a recurve or compound or a rifle in your hand, that's what makes it lethal or not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's all good advice, too, things people need to hear. Now, I don't want to keep you too late. Obviously, I thank you for being on here, but I just got a couple more points I do want to hit today. The first one, you know, is do you have any advice that you would give anybody new starting out into traditional archery?
Strictly traditional archery?
Correct. Well, or, I mean, hunting in general, just something that would make it easier on somebody starting.
I've given this advice out to other people, the other podcasts too, but it always rings true. It's like, don't be afraid to ask for help or for assistance or it's a steep learning curve, especially if you making that transition from compound to trad bow, whatever, you have certain expectations in your mind, like how you're supposed to shoot or how heavy a bow you should pull and, all that, start fresh, just drop all that stuff you had in your mind about how things are supposed to be, and lose your ego and don't be afraid to ask for help or, reach out for someone to go shoot with and you'll learn way more. You'll learn way more better form and habits and stuff like that. You'll become a better archer and a better hunter faster, and you're going to gain a lot of friends along the way. I wish I would have known that earlier in this process or just in my life in general. I'm deep down, I'm actually a very shy person. And I'm always I got to figure out the hard way myself, because I don't want, the help outside, just like how I started this podcast. He was like, I'm going to start a business not knowing how to do it and not know where to go. Yeah. You know what I mean? Well, it's 14 months, 16 months later, and here we are. It's completely different the way I envisioned when I first opened it up. Find the help you need or the help you don't, the thing you don't need, and have fun with it. Don't get frustrated with it. And there's thousands of resources out there. Just be willing to go find it and be willing to make a friend.
Yeah. And that's something for me. I mean, you kind of hit it there, because I'm not, believe it or not, even though I have a podcast, I'm not that person that's going out and seeking help or talking to people. So, yeah. It does a lot. Everybody, or at least most people, are willing to help you out, and you'll probably even get some help that you don't want in the process as long as you're around.
Right, but you always, I always have the mentality, everybody has something to offer.
Yeah.
You just got to be willing to listen to it. And sometimes that what they're offering is something you don't want to do. Does that make sense?
Right? Absolutely.
So you go into a positive attitude. Everybody has something to offer. And roll with it.
Now, the last thing, and this is up to you if you want to participate in this or not, but do you have any pet peeves with traditional archery or anything you see in traditional archery communities that you would call somebody out for or want to call people out for?
That's a good one. That's a tough question.
It's your chance to be rude without being rude to people. Yeah.
But it's a pet peeve of mine, and I also agree with it too. It's a dichotomy I live in here. Everybody wants to shit on crossbows and crossbow hunters, for good and bad reason.
Right.
And the thing I don't like, I guess, about that initial response that everybody has, that crossbow hunters are just lazy slobs and all this stuff, I don't like that initial response that everybody assumes that, it's just the easy way out or whatever.
Yeah.
That being said, I do get annoyed with it. I I try to have an open mind with it. That's, I guess that's why I like, why I'm torn with it. Like, it's like dichotomy of ideas in my head. Like the, I don't like it. I don't like them in the field for, particular reasons, not, I like the fact that it can get people into the woods to enjoy the things that I enjoy, right? I like the fact that it can get kids into the woods earlier in archery seasons.
Yeah.
And I have, like, I won a crossbow in a gun bash years and years ago, and like that's what my kids, like, we would go out in archery season. And like, I'd have them with the crossbow, and like, we haven't killed one with it yet, but like, I like the idea of just spending time with my boys in the woods while they're old enough to hunt with that device, but not old enough to hunt with, you know, a recurve yet.
Yep.
Or even a compound. So, so like, I like it for that reason. You know, I love it for that reason, like as a parent. But man, I hate seeing guys my age, able-bodied guys, telling me that they took a crack at a doe at 90 yards.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's, I try so hard not to shit on crossbow hunters, and I don't want to have that mentality, but towards them, I don't want to lump everybody in one category, because like, you know, I have one, I guess you can call me one.
Yeah.
But we all have those same stories of that guy just told you about, that, you know, 30, 40 year old guy that takes pot shots with it, and you know, he's
I heard of a this.
You know where I'm going. Like, you know exactly.
This winter, I heard of a 130-yard shot.
Right, and like that's not archery. Like that's no longer archery season, right?
I agree with you, but I at the same time, and I kind of had this thought the other night. I think that in a way it could be helping our cause as traditional archers, because when conventional archery, we'll call it, becomes guns,
mm-hmm.
people are going to want to hunt with a stick and string again when all other bows become guns.
Right. You see people going away from like rejecting that technology because it's just, it's ridiculous. It's not, at some point it doesn't become archery anymore. It becomes, you know.
I'd be cooler with it if they had their own season.
Or if they did single shot. You know, I mean, it's like a single shot rifle, pretty much. If you're shooting 100 yards accurately, and they do shoot 100 yards accurately, but like, the amount of time it takes for that bolt to get to that deer, a lot of things can happen. You know, shooting, you know, I have no doubt those people that tell me that they shoot 90, 100 yards can shoot that accurately all day long. But it's the other things that are happening that aren't them. It's the wind conditions, that stick they didn't see, it's the deer taking a step.
Yeah.
That, and in all those horror stories we hear, you know, you see the, you know, you find the, you find the deadheads and stuff laying in the woods when you're shed hunting in the late winter, early spring, and you wonder if a bolt or an arrow went through it, and you couldn't find it for whatever reason. So yeah, like I like them. I mean, they have their use. Like, they're a great tool for people that can't bow hunt for whatever reason. If they, you know, if they are too old, they don't have the strength anymore. If they actually have some sort of physical issue with their arms, they can't pull a bow back, or for children, like in my case, I love them for that. But there's a certain point where it doesn't become archery anymore. And that's the part I struggle with. Right.
And I'm on the same page.
Yeah. And, you know, like you mentioned about, you just mentioned about another season for them. Like, I don't know if we have troubles here in Pennsylvania with our harvest numbers, with our deer population, but in some areas, I'm sure, positive in some states, it's having a negative impact on or it's having too much of an impact on harvest rates, right?
And I think if it hasn't yet, I think it will. I know I'm in West Virginia, and I mean, it's hard. Most people aren't going to bow shops to buy bows anymore. They're going to buy crossbows.
Right.
I mean, they've taken over. And I, you know, personally heard stories too of a lot more poaching happening with them, you know, night hunting and that sort of thing. So I know no truth to any of that, but just the stories alone kind of make you worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, a poacher's gonna poach.
Yeah,
my opinion. A poacher's gonna poach no matter what weapon they have, and, you know. But it's just, yeah. At some point in time, you gotta take into account the efficacy of them. If it's gonna have an impact on hunting season, I would hate to see, you know, an archery season get shortened because of the success rate, success percentage of crossbows coming into the mix, or, you know.
Agreed.
And, like, you know, archery as a whole is getting more popular. That's why you see all these problems out west with tag allocations for mule deer and elk and stuff. It's, you know, more people are interested in it. And, you know, let's face it, compound bows are just, they're phenomenal in their accuracy and their speed and everything. So, like, you could comfortably take a shot at 50 yards. 60 yards, right? For most, I would say most average hunters, if they were, you know, serious about their, how they shoot and their equipment they have, a 50-yard shot is, you know.
It's not that terrible at all.
It's not, I mean, it might be the max of their range, but it's probably within their range. And you have a nice big bull bugling at 50 yards, I bet you most people are going to take that shot, you know, with the compound. And, you know, those harvest rates are going to have impact on seasons sooner or later.
Yeah.
What state is it? I think Utah or maybe Washington State. I forget. It's one of the Western states. They have, I think, now a traditional bow season.
Do they?
one of them does. I should have done my homework on that.
So we've got here in West Virginia, we've got a 4-day heritage season now, so
yeah,
we can do the round balls or a trad bow. So
it's
a step in the right direction. I haven't taken advantage of it yet because it's always super cold.
But they did they take away from other?
They did not.
Yeah,
no, they because we our season ends on December 31st, so okay. They actually opened it up in it's either end of January, I think, like January 24th. I'm just not a cold weather person, so I.
Yeah, we have a our late archery and flintlock season opens up the day after Christmas, and it goes till mid January or even later, depending what part of the state you're in. And I always have high hopes of of going out in the late season, and then he's like, "Man, it is 10 degrees outside.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here nice and warm on the couch, and I already got a couple deer in the freezer between me and my dad and my boys." It's like, nah.
Yeah, I try, but I can't make myself go out when it's freezing out. But anything else you want to talk about? Anything you want to say about your company or?
No, I mean, just you'll see Laurel Mountain change is going to be a constant for the company and myself. Like it's, so don't be surprised if things keep moving in a different direction. It doesn't stay constant. You know, thank you for having me on and help get the name of my business out there and kind of showcasing what I do, what I built, and what I'm trying to support. I appreciate that.
For sure coming on. I don't have many guests. I'm, you know, kind of a half-assed podcast here, but trying to build it up a bit. So I thank you for coming on here.
Yeah, no problem.
And then just to confirm, so people know where you're at, it is LaurelMountainOutfitters.com.
Yeah, that's the website, LaurelMountainOutfitters.com. And then on Facebook and Instagram, I think it's Laurel Mountain Outfitters, but underscore between each word.
Gotcha.
So there's a lot of Laurel Mountain stuff, especially where I'm at in Pennsylvania, is why I named it what it is. But you'll find me. Just find Google Laurel Mountain Outfitters, you'll find it.
You were not hard to find, that's for sure. But I think you...
I don't know if that's good or bad.
For sure, though, I thank you for coming on here, and definitely want people to check out your website, because you do have, like I said, you've got your, right now you could be a one-stop shop, and I'm sure you're going to add more products in the future as long as it keeps growing. So you know, the more options we have, the better it is. So.
That's the plan. I just needed a niche down. You know, that's that was too broad in the beginning. That's where the fishing stuff had to go. Niche down into what my audience is, what my customer base is, and what they want, and then me too. I mean, it's my bread and butter, where I feel comfortable in, and where I think I can add value. Like I said earlier, value added. You know, I could, you know, if I can't speak comfortably or to the product or demonstrate how to use it or actually make it myself, then that's not the spot for me.
Yep. Well, I definitely wish you luck in this, and you know, once again, thank you.
All right, so that was Ryan from Laurel Mountain Outfitters. For those of you that have not checked out Laurel Mountain Outfitters already, I suggest you do so. You can find them at laurelmountainoutfitters.com, on Instagram at laurel_mountain_outfitters. You can Google search them. They're on Facebook. Very easy to find. Definitely check them out and support a small business. Now, as always, I do always like to give a shout out to a podcast episode that I've been listening to. However, since it has been a long time and this podcast does not have a ton of episodes yet, I'm just going to shout out an entire podcast, which is the Standing Wolf Archery Podcast. I discovered them recently. I've been making my way through. There's a handful of episodes so far, and they've all been killer. So definitely give them a listen. And like always, you can find me on Instagram at tradlore_archery. Email me at jimmyhalpenny@icloud.com. That's jimmyhalpenny@icloud.com. Or you can search me on Facebook under Jimmy Halpenny. I might be the only one on there. I'm not sure. But you can find me. If you have any questions, please reach out and continue to listen. Continue to support small businesses and other podcasters as well. And you all have a good rest of your morning, evening, afternoon, whatever it may be. And I will catch you on the next episode.